And the Oscar goes to, by a nose, Nicole Kidman.
Hello, Joshua.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Welcome to the Kid Manifesto. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
This is a big time for you. I'm happy to get you in this kind of post-spooky season, but would you mind introducing yourself real quick?
Sure. Well, my name is Joshua Conkle. I'm a Los Angeles-based screenwriter and playwright. I currently write for The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina on Netflix, and before that, I wrote for A Series of Unfortunate Events for Netflix.
Two things that I love slash am loving. Full disclosure, I'm only about halfway through Sabrina right now. Can you tell me one Miranda Otto fact that I should know?
Well, I told Miranda that Aunt Zelda was a Capricorn, and we had a little bit of an argument about it because she felt that Aunt Zelda would be an Aquarius, but she's wrong and I'm right. And then eventually she came around to understanding that Aunt Zelda is a Capricorn like I am.
What are the defining characteristics of just a Capricorn and an Aquarius, just so we can understand the subtle dispute?
Capricorns are super ambitious. They work really hard. They're traditionalists, and they want to use the structures that are in place to win and to achieve their ambitions. And they don't care how long that takes. And they're workaholics. And Aquariuses are like Ambrose Spellman. They're like free spirits. They're, you know, sort of wild. They follow the beat of their own drum. You think of the 1960s when you think of Aquarius, because that was the age of Aquarius. So Zelda's most certainly not an Aquarius. She definitely is a Capricorn. And that's the tea on that.
I love that. And Sabrina, obviously a Scorpio because of her very particular birthday.
Yeah, and Ambrose is an Aquarius, and Hilda is Cancer.
I feel a little underrepresented as a very strong Sagittarius, but I will let it slide. I also want to ask you about something that I think about all the time, which may have just been a passing thought for you, so there's a chance we might edit this out. Okay. But once upon a time, you tweeted about how you wanted to have a podcast where you would just do tarot readings for like D-list celebrities. And I kid you not, I think about that, like, I would say probably once a week.
It is in the works as we speak. It might happen. Yeah.
I'm really excited. I truly believe that no one should have a podcast, myself included. But like, this is the exception that I'm willing to make. It's like, this is the one that I would listen to. I think it's so funny.
I'm really scared of it, so I might not do it. But if I can get over myself, then I think it could be really fun.
Well, you have at least one built-in fan, so.
Thanks.
let's continue talking about you, because mostly I just don't want to talk about this movie. This is a movie that I forced on you. So before we talk about that, can we talk about maybe like Nicole movies you would have liked to have done, or maybe the first time you became acutely aware of her as a homosexual? Sorry for outing you.
No, either I'm a really poor guest for this podcast or a really interesting one, because I'm not a Nicole Kidman fan. I feel neutral to positive about her. I recognize that she's a talented actress and very beautiful, but I've never liked a Nicole Kidman movie that I've ever seen that I can think of. The thing that I like the most, I'd say, is probably The Others, just because it's spooky and gothy. But even that, I feel like neutral to good about. And I guess, I almost said Pretty Little Liars. what Big Little Lies, I liked too. But all, again, I felt good about it, but I don't like love it. So I'm a little bit bewildered by the gay standing for Nicole Kidman. Sorry. I like her. I mean, she's beautiful and she's a good actress. But I, beyond that, I'm a little stumped, if I'm being honest.
I guess as a very important journalist, getting all sides of the spectrum is important. So we need you here, kind of like when the New York Times does, like, you know, a piece about Nazis and tries to glam it up. Although this is perhaps not quite as intense.
Well, also her answer
also
to
in no way am I calling you a Nazi.
Also, her answer to your wig question was so awful. It made me like her a little bit less. And I don't dislike her. I do like her. I feel warm about her. But she's never been in like an amazing movie in my eyes. Am I wrong?
Well, okay. I mean, from my perspective, yes, you're categorically wrong. But I do think it's an interesting stance. And I think it's an interesting stance for this podcast. And definitely for the movie that we're about to talk about, which is like, even from the most, true blue Nicole Kidman fan, I don't think is something that they're necessarily willing to go to bat for.
Well, I also feel like maybe I haven't seen her really great ones. Like, my boyfriend last night was talking about Dead Calm and how great that is, and I've never seen that. I've never seen The Hours, to be honest.
Okay. Okay. Have you seen an Eyes Wide Shut?
I've seen Eyes Wide Shut. I like that movie.
Okay. What are your thoughts on like some more silly Nicole, like a Moulin Rouge or a Paddington or a...
I haven't seen Paddington. I like Moulin Rouge fine. I'm in the middle.
I like that you've got a little bit of curiosity going on, and you're certainly not like not seeing things because she's in it. So this is an okay place to be.
Okay, thank you.
Are you going to be tuning into Big Little Lies season 2?
For sure. I really liked the first season.
Okay, great. This is, you know what? I think you undersold yourself. I think you're in the right place right now.
Okay.
I don't expect to make you like a convert by the end of the episode, but I think this is a very valuable perspective.
Great.
All right. So do you want to talk about this movie?
Yes.
So I can't even announce the movie because I don't know which title to refer to it by.
I think the American title is Nightmaster, although the original title seems to be Shadows Dance.
It's not only that, it's Watch the Shadows Dance, which I think is even funnier.
Oh, God, what a terrible title. And I guess it's a TV movie that was part of a series called Tomorrow's News.
Yeah, it's directed by a guy named Mark Joffe, who also directed Nicole in this like kind of TV PSA that like, not only was it supposed to be part of a series as well, but they didn't even film the ending. So it's literally just like the first 4/5 of a movie, which is why I'm not talking about it.
They gave up.
Yeah, but that one's called like, I think it's called Room to Move. But yeah, this movie's wild. It's also barely an hour and 30 minutes. I think it's maybe slightly less.
What, Nightmaster?
Yeah.
It feels 5 hours long.
Yeah, no, it feels endlessly long, but I already told you off mic, but I gave up writing notes on this movie halfway through, A, out of boredom, and B, because I could not follow what was happening.
Yeah, if I'm being fully honest, I had to eventually just like get up and fold laundry and look at my phone and like...
And you were drinking or were drunk.
Yeah, I was.
I had a lot to drink during this.
It was rough. And I'm, again, the Capricorn thing, you know, I want to be an A student. I want to do things properly. And I just absolutely could not.
Yeah. Every time I go on someone else's podcast, I swear to God, I watch the movie like 3 times. I have pages of notes. And then every time I do my own, I'm like, well, I can probably get through this with one eye open. which I don't know. Maybe that's a Sagittarian thing. I truly don't know. But I love to talk about it only when it's convenient for me.
Right.
Do you want to try and explain the plot of this movie at just like a really high level before we get into it? Like the logline?
Sure. It's set 15 years in the future, inexplainably. And it's about a group of high school students, I think, who have a karate club. Their teacher for the karate club is a former soldier who's kind of got PTSD. And they stay up all night playing war games in an abandoned factory and then have karate class at 5 a.m. in the morning. And so their studies are suffering because of it, which raises the ire of a concerned teacher named Mrs. Spain. I think that's her name anyway. Mm-hmm. And then the karate teacher is doing drugs, and they witness one of his prize pupil witnesses him killing the drug dealer, and it kind of all falls out from there.
That was an incredibly generous summary. That was a movie that sounds like sort of interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely not interesting.
I also appreciate you like trying to figure out their schedule, because they tell you first in the movie that they have midnight like practice, or they tell you first that they have 5 a.m. karate class, and then like 20 minutes later they say that they like are playing these games at midnight, and like I just don't know when they're sleeping.
No, I know. And also there's no karate in the movie. Like they're either in karate class, they're doing gymnastics. And then when they're playing their war games, they're war games, they're not karate. Although they are dressed like ninjas while they do it, which is, again, not karate.
Yeah, I think it's very important to note that they are definitely dressed like Halloween costume ninjas, but they never say that word once. They do say karate, but they don't do it.
Yeah, and there's a lot of trampolining, too. Like, we do get a little Nicole Kidman on a trampoline. Not nearly enough, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, kind of like in the recurring theme on this podcast of like, did Nicole actually do this thing? Do you think she did those trampoline flips? Because like, I have no coordination, but I could do one. And I think it's like early enough in her career that she wouldn't justify a stunt double.
I think that she could do it, but didn't do it. That's how I feel. Like, she even then was like, no, I'm not doing that. Because you kind of like... You cut to her, like, finishing the trampoline, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. I was really looking, though, because it is, like, natural hair, Nicole, obviously, because it's so early. And I was like, maybe that's, like, hard to replicate. But then I thought about how she had a stunt double that was a boy in BMX Bandits. And that was, like, right before this. So I'm like, well, I guess there's precedent.
Right.
But, like, I'm an idiot, and I can do a front flip or a back flip on a trampoline. And that's a giant trampoline.
I can't, I don't think. I don't think I could do that.
I think most people can.
I think maybe I'd be too scared.
Well, okay, maybe.
I'm very frightened of trampolines, though, to be quite honest.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I feel like I've hurt myself every time I've been on a trampoline, because you like jump into those coils or whatever.
Yeah.
It happens every time.
Did you have a friend in like high school or anything that was like rich and had one of those trampolines where it was like lowered into the grounds, like the trampoline was like grass level? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
It's like, so like if a trampoline regularly is like an above ground pool, this would just be like the regular pool equivalent. And it was always like, that was just like how people proved that they were wealthy. And I always thought it was so over the top.
We didn't really have wealthy people where I grew up.
This was a family that also, as a family unit of four, would ride unicycles together down the block. So I think they were just unwell to begin with.
Ew.
They did have a below ground trampoline, I guess.
That's so tacky.
when do you think the last time you were on a trampoline was, if you had to guess a year?
I remember it. I was living in New Zealand that year because I was married to a New Zealander, and it was like, so it would have been like 2013. Maybe there's a picture of it. That's why I remember it.
The last time I went was one of those like trampoline gyms, you know, that are like a thing. And we went as like a team outing, and someone kneed themselves in the nose and broke their own nose.
That feels right. That tracks.
Yeah. Did you notice in the credits that they just credited a band called the Colored Girls as having done the music, but there's like live music in the movie that is just like an all male band. So I didn't know if they meant to apply that band was called the Colored Girls, these all white men, or if they just did like the bleep blop MIDI music for the score.
I hope it's the latter. Because I did actually like that new wave band. That was like one of the things that I liked most about the movie, just because I love new wave bands performing in 80s movies.
It felt, with, like, the red and blue backlighting, it felt very, like, Twin Peaks The Return, because they didn't really serve a plot other than just, like, being a focal point. Or, like, the Bronze in Buffy.
Exactly. And there was one where they were singing a slow song, and there weren't any instruments, but there are obviously instruments playing because it's a song, and they were just, like, standing in place. They were just standing in place singing quietly with no one playing any instruments around them. But that was a really sharp choice.
I love magical realism.
Yeah.
I don't think we've said this yet, but Nicole Kidman's character's name is Amy, which just makes me think of when she's in The Beguiled and she constantly has to say Amy in a Southern accent.
Yeah, I've never seen The Beguiled either, so that's
on my list. Oh my god, you should watch it.
I know. It's the first time I've ever heard her speak with her Australian accent.
This movie?
Yeah.
I was like, she definitely doesn't in The Beguiled. yeah, it's there. She's literally a kid. She's like maybe 18 or 19 here.
Yeah, and she feels like a real trashy Aussie girl with her natural hair and her thick country bumpkin bogan accent.
Yeah, how about that scene where it's like a dream sequence and she's like a little promiscuous in it and she goes into one of the guy's like rooms and is making out with that other guy?
Yeah, she's, it's certainly a look.
In the year 2002... I don't necessarily know what grade I was in, but I did not receive my homework via a large floppy disk like these kids did.
No, I don't even know if we were still on floppy disks. I was in college in 2002, to be honest. So I think we had moved past that. I'm almost certain. And that Strokes album.
Technology.
Yeah. So bad.
Some of their computer, one of them has like a computer that opens like a book would. Yeah. I mean, I guess they all do. I guess all laptops operated that premise, but like a book in the orientation that we'd read a book.
Yeah.
Which I thought was very progressive and very forward thinking.
Mm. Did they ever explain what the deal is with the kid in the wheelchair? I can't remember them. I don't know why he's in the karate club is what I'm getting at.
So what he's like, so I wrote out this extended metaphor, but like I was writing that like the game they were playing was kind of like the danger room for the X-Men where they're practicing.
Mm-hmm.
And he, the kid in the wheelchair, who was pretty cute.
He was the cutest.
Yeah, he was definitely the cutest. I said that he was like the Professor Xavier because he's like the techie guy that's like making the plan. Because remember later in the movie, he says like something about how Nicole Kidman walks up and is like, there sure are going to be a lot of traps in this thing, huh? And he's like, yeah, sure. This is riveting dialogue in this scenario. But I think he's the one planning the like layout of the kind of game. I can't even explain what the game is they're playing.
I thought that that was the case, but I wasn't sure if I was just imposing that logic onto the movie when it didn't actually include that.
Or yeah, they show him up in the like crow's nest part. Like with a computer at one point towards the end.
Okay.
But yeah, this game is like parkour, but also paintball.
They're dressed as ninjas.
I think that one of the funniest parts in the movie is when, when two people are competing, they do this thing where like, instead of like shooting them, they can like tag them with like a streak of paint on their forehead and they look kind of like the last airbender. But yeah, the kid like shows up to school the next day with the paint still on his face, like as a scarlet letter. Yeah. And like realistically, like even if you didn't want to wash it off, even if that was part of the thing and you had to like be embarrassed, like I feel like just the act of sleeping would just distort that perfectly straight line.
Right.
Also, is that kid gay? Are we getting queer coding for him because he has a left ear pierced?
The kid in the wheelchair?
Not the kid in the wheelchair, the kid that has to go to school because he's the kid earlier that gets like,
yeah,
all the bullies are trying to fuck with him.
I felt like maybe he could be.
I wanted something queer in this movie and it's truly, yeah, there's nothing.
There's nothing queer. It's like a desert of queerness. And I kept thinking about how when I was a little boy and I would go to boy sleepovers, they would always watch something that had like Jean-Claude Van Damme in it. And I'd be so miserable because I just wanted to watch Dirty Dancing or Grease. That's how this movie made me feel.
I remember watching Air Force One at a sleepover and me just being like, there are no like women on screen for more than, yeah, a couple of seconds.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you notice that most of this movie are characters standing in doorways and then a cut away and then a cut back and then they're no longer standing in doorways?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. My favorite thing about it was that all of the kids only wear black and white because they look quite chic, actually. That's one of the best things about the movie. And they also made me think of Moira Rose, yeah, from Schitt's Creek.
Yeah, they definitely all wear black for the most part. And then until the end, there's some like white blouse moments, which are very chic. But I did notice that in like the final scene, there's like a boy wearing black and a boy wearing white. And one of them is the good guy and one of them is the bad guy.
Yeah, it's like Spy versus Spy from Mad Magazine.
Yeah. There's some really unrealistic physics here because like when they do show the quote unquote like karate fighting, it's all like very weak and embarrassing. But then at one point, one of the kids like scrabbles up like a shipping container to like get out of the way of another person.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I don't understand where your skill set is necessarily.
Yeah. Well, again, it's certainly not karate. We see some like ring row kind of gymnast stuff. Even like just them running isn't very impressive. You know, it's a mess.
The physics are wild. There's that part at the very end where one of the kids is hanging. Like at the beginning, there's a, I guess like the end and how you know you've won is like you have to climb this rope and ring a bell, kind of like a gym school thing.
Yeah.
And like one of them, you know, again, like scrabbles up. But at the end, there's another kid hanging from it. And it's literally like six stories up and there's nothing below them. In fact, like the villain dies by like falling.
Yeah.
And he's just like hanging there. And then Nicole, like having just watched this man die, first of all, just like very cheekily is like, you're going to be up there all night. Like it's not threatening. And then he just kind of swings a little and he lets go. And he just is on the like balcony where she is like a solid two stories below.
Yeah. What's there were like ninja stars too in the final battle, which is a fun surprise. It's one of the most fun things about the movie.
There's ninja stars there, and then there's like a paintball ninja star earlier in the movie because one of the kids throws it at another one and it leaves like not the stripe, but it leaves just like a regular paint stain on him. And I was like, I don't necessarily understand the mechanics of how that would work. should we talk about the drug subplot here?
Yeah.
So you did a better job explaining this than I could have, but it's the teacher is doing drugs.
Yes. And what's the drug dealer's name?
Hold on.
It doesn't matter. So he kills the drug dealer and that's witnessed by his prize pupil. And then he tries to then kill his prize pupil in the tournament and then after the tournament. Is that right?
Yes. Also, okay. I think this is the kid in the wheelchair, but there's one kid whose name is Pete and his last name is Gates and his nickname is Pearly. So his name is Pearly Gates.
Yeah. That's the kid in the wheelchair.
Yeah. Awesome. At least it's not like a wheels or something. Like it's a non-wheelchair specific nickname.
Yeah. That's nice.
Like I feel like 80s movies, you're always just like wheels or like skids.
Yeah. And is it a real drug or is it like a made up future drug?
So I was going to ask that because I'm pretty stupid about most things, but specifically about drugs. And there's one scene where like they're doing the sale in the bar and he rolls like a, like almost like a laboratory vial to the guy.
Right. It looks like it's about the size and shape of like a tube of chapstick, but it's clear and full of something. And I have to say, I've done a lot of drugs and I didn't recognize that one. So I was wondering if it was like Soma or some sort of like made up future drug.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like Star Wars Episode 2 where there's a guy selling death sticks and death sticks are just like glorified space cigarettes.
Right. And I don't remember seeing anyone do the drug.
No, there's like a couple of heightened dream sequences where I was like, maybe these people are on drugs, but I think it's just like, no, they're just in his dream.
But we didn't see anyone like snort it or shoot it up or anything.
Maybe that was like a 80s TV restriction.
Yeah.
I would like to talk about how at one point the teacher tries to run the main boy over with his car.
Yeah. And then he's saved by the other teacher, right? Like the...
Yeah.
The nosy Miss Wardwell of it all, who just is like showing up at the kids' like new wave club, and she's concerned about their grades, and so she's having all these like clandestine conversations with the karate teacher, and also their former lovers.
At one point damaged. She talks about at one point she gives a speech about how she knew he had PTSD, and that was one of the reasons that they had to break up because she was like not she was afraid of him.
Yeah, and she never like goes to the administration or anything like that. She just like has private conversations with the teacher and with the kids about how she's concerned. It's like, well, if you're concerned, do something besides like following your students around like a creep.
She really is. Yeah, she really is like first episode Miss Wardwell.
Yeah.
How do you, speaking of her, how do you feel about the memes of her where it's like Miss Wardwell just like popping up out of nowhere and it's like the Kim Kardashian like looking around bushes and things like that?
We knew it was going to happen. I mean, we're living for that. We love it. I mean, we knew that she would be like a gay icon. And
what's your, can I ask you what your favorite and least favorite meme from Sabrina has been so far? You don't have to answer if you don't want.
I don't know that there are any that I, there are definitely like opinions that I don't like. Oh, I know what my least favorite is. And one of our mutual friends, Tom Zohar, posted it, which is like using SpongeBob SquarePants to make fun of the blurred
lenses. The like blur.
Ugh, I never want to hear about that blur again as long as I live. That and like wanting Salem to talk are like the two most annoying opinions about the show.
That's a good one. Although I did love that photo of Salem on the red carpet. I live for that.
I know, it's so good.
Let's see what else is in this movie. Oh, they so one of the few notes I took is that they keep talking about something called Deep Cool, which like is hard.
Oh,
for
I thought
me,
they were but, saying Deep Cool.
So I did too, because it's like, it's hard enough just, I mean, not to be like, the U.S. English is like so much easier to understand, but just like as a person who speaks it, like, I was like struggling hearing myself say it out loud, and then I was like, I have to turn on subtitles because I do not understand what these Australians are saying. And
so yeah, they're saying coup like C-O-U-P, like the French coup? Oh.
Yeah. There's just like half those letters are silent.
Yeah. That makes more sense.
Yeah, and I still don't know what Deep Coup is. I guess it's like maybe a code word for the program or something.
Yeah. Or like a double, explaining like a double agent or something like that.
Sure, yeah. I mean, your guess is as good as mine. how about when Nicole Kidman strolls into the teacher's office and just looks at her and says, "You need to leave us alone."
I mean, she's not wrong.
She's not wrong.
Leave us alone. Stop following us, Miss Wardwell.
It would be like if Susie just walked into Miss Wardwell's office, yeah, and said that and then just left, because there's no real follow-up.
Yeah, well, Sabrina does do that to Miss Wardwell very shortly, and rightfully so. Someone should have done it sooner. Susie or Roz should have done it like in episode one.
Yeah.
It's also like Sabrina inviting Ms. Wardwell to Dr. Cerberus's in the pilot. It's like, what are you doing? Don't invite your teacher to the diner.
Yeah. She's a friend to all. How about that scene? So I kind of alluded to this earlier. Nicole's wearing all black. The like good boy is wearing all white. That's how we know he's good. And he's practicing moves. And she says basically like the thing that like Will Ferrell says to Molly Shannon in Superstar, where she's just like, "You've got some nice moves."
Yeah.
And then she says, she's like, "I'll be your mirror."
Yeah. Like fucking Nico in the Velvet Underground. She's like, "Can you show me those moves?" And then he like starts to, and then she flirts with him and he's like, "Take it seriously." And then he's like turned off because she's not taking the like art of karate seriously enough for him.
Yeah. Who do you think is cuter? That boy, the like good boy, or the bad boy that you can tell is bad because he has a black clothing and his hair has product in it?
I think the bad boy is cuter. I always like a bad boy. But the boy in the wheelchair is the cutest of all.
If I had to force rank, I would say him, then the bad boy, then the good boy, then any of the others.
Then any of the others who are interchangeable.
Yeah, there were so many. At one point, it gets, like, very complex. There's this scene towards the end where they all kind of, like, corner the gym teacher by, like, front-flipping off of various shipping containers to surround him. And I was like, oh, there are a lot of characters that we'll never know about in this movie.
Yeah, at one point, I looked at my boyfriend and I was like, I've never seen that guy in my entire life. And it was, like, the last 20 minutes of the movie.
I was going to do some research because obviously when you look at this movie now, like the box art and stuff is like Nicole Kidman in Nightmaster. But I wonder, I guess I don't really know because it was post BMX Bandits, if it was branded like that at the time or if just with hindsight, they're like, maybe this will make people watch our movie.
I think it's probably the latter because she's not even the lead and she does, she's not featured in a way that feels special, really.
Yeah. She's very minimal in this movie. She doesn't actually do very much.
No.
Yeah. At one point I thought she was going to become like the next Supreme because there's a lot of talk about like who the new champion will be and all the rules about the new champion. And it doesn't really happen.
No. And they would never give that to a woman anyway.
I know. I was like, maybe this movie will be progressive. BMX Bandits has a similar thing where she gets really close to being like the hero and then she's not.
Yeah.
How about that extended video message from like the good boy's mother that's like 6 minutes long?
I know. Yeah.
It reminded me of all the mother segments in Rent, like all the mother voicemails, but it was just like all together. It was like a super cut.
Yeah, there's also a really good one. Have you ever seen Ladies and Gentlemen, The Fabulous Stains?
No.
Oh my God, you should see it. It's the first movie. It's Laura Dern and Diane Lane's first movie. And they're both 15 and they're in an all-girl punk band, but they're also runaways. And there's like all these extended scenes where like the news is interviewing their mom as she watches them on television. And it's so good. You'd love that movie.
Cute.
Yeah.
I should watch because I talk about Diane Lane and Laura Dern enough on this podcast.
Yeah.
It only seems fitting. God, I don't even know if I have. Oh, how about when they do that? I'm just literally looking at my notes now. How about when they do that like zip line, but he does it like on his stomach. And so he just looks like a flying squirrel. That looked really fun.
Yeah, it did look fun. I mean, there's a lot that looks fun about it. It has like some fun, like I kept thinking of the Ninja Turtles just because the abandoned factory kind of setting. There's a lot about the aesthetic that looks fun. Look, I'd play that game if it was just a matter of like getting paint on my face. I mean, once people are throwing ninja stars around and trying to run you over with a car, it gets a little too serious, but I think it looks kind of fun.
It does look fun. And there's not like that many things as a kid that age that you can get into at midnight. So,
yeah, I mean, I was doing drugs, so they're doing the better thing.
I mean, both are represented here.
It's true. Yeah, you're right.
How about when the factory, I guess, is like kind of a mystery to me because they obviously have this like set up like course with operations and electronics and things like that, but also most of the outside action happens there, so it's just like open to all people.
Yeah, and it's not abandoned, right? Because they do have a scene where the kid is like talking to who I assume is the night manager of some sort, who seems to be like letting them do this. So presumably during the day it's like a working factory of some sort.
Yeah. What do you think they make there?
It's probably like fruitcakes or mop tops or something. You know, something really
very specific. I love the idea that they're just running all over a food production line.
Yeah. Well, my apartment in Brooklyn when I lived in New York was like a couple of blocks away from an abandoned fruitcake factory. So I just have that always at the top of my mind.
It's a good pull.
Yeah.
I love that it's kind of like, it's definitely working, but it's also kind of like the Winchester Mystery House in that at one point, like one of the gay kid almost falls out of like a fifth story window and the other guy has to like pull him back in. Like it's very dangerous.
It also feels like the setting of like an old school Nintendo game, like Donkey Kong or something with like the levels and the ladders.
It's just
and
three dimensional Donkey Kong. Yeah. It's literally all holding it together.
Yeah.
I don't know that I have that much more to say about this movie. They all had guns at one point. Didn't like that.
Yeah.
It also kind of seemed to fly in the face of ninja convention.
True. I think that we've given it probably more conversation than it warrants, to be honest. It's a very bad movie.
Yeah, I don't know. Any final thoughts or call outs on this wondrous film? I gave it 1 star on Letterboxd, I'll tell you that much.
I would probably be inclined to do the same. It's hard to recommend it to anybody. And I love a B movie, but this is so bad that it goes past good and back to bad again. It's just like, it's just not watchable. It's really painful.
Do you like B movie, like the Jerry Seinfeld joint?
Yeah, I liked that. I saw it when it came out. I was a teenager, I think. And, I saw it once and I enjoyed it.
Great. Yeah. No further questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot to say about this movie. I probably wouldn't recommend it. I have seen it twice, and I think that's enough for one lifetime.
Mm-hmm. What Nicole Kidman movie should I watch that I haven't seen? Like, what's your favorite?
I really like Birth. Is probably my favorite performance of hers, and I think it's her most underrated movie.
Okay.
It's also available on Netflix. Mm-hmm. Outside of that, I'm surprised you didn't... What are your thoughts on Practical Magic? Is it too, like, cutesy for you?
It's a bit cutesy. I do like that movie. I haven't seen it in many, many years, so...
I think Stoker would be a good choice for you as well.
Oh, I saw that at the theater. I hated it.
Oh, did you? Okay.
Hate it.
Okay, well, this is going to be hard. I think Birth is the choice. I also really love Margot at the Wedding.
Oh, yeah, I've never seen that either. So I'll watch those and I'll get back to you.
Yeah, it's her and Jennifer Jason Leigh, and I think they're both just, like, at the top of their game, and I think that movie gets forgotten when we think about her.
You love Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Oh, my God, I know. I think about her in Annihilation, like,
all the time.
let's do this. Let's have you try and rate the movie in so much as a movie like this can be rated. I'm going to give you some 1 through 5 categories, and they can be about either just Nicole or the movie as a whole. It's really up to you to justify. 5 is the high score here, and you are competing for the very prestigious Golden Compass Award.
Okay.
so the first, thank you. The first one on here is going to be the wigs in this movie, 1 through 5.
1.
Yeah.
There's no wigs, is there?
There aren't any. They for sure did not have a wig budget. There was not a wig person. Okay, great. How about the accents in this film?
5.
I'm always interested to see how people respond to that question because, like, in a sense, she is just using her actual voice, but also it's just enjoyable for us as a people.
Yeah, I've never heard her Australian accent. And those are some thick-ass Bogan accents in this movie. Like, these are some deep Australians.
There's no way I have the resources to do this because there's no clips on YouTube, but the way they say deep coup is truly unbelievable.
It's amazing, yeah.
Okay, so this next one is the Naomi Watts scale. So a high score on this would suggest a strong connection of Naomi Watts to this movie. Common examples being, like, did she audition for it? Do her and Nicole ever talk about it? Have Naomi's kids seen it? That sort of thing.
I'm going to say 1. I think there's no connection.
You don't think that, because they worked together in Flirting shortly after in Australia, you don't think that she went out for this?
Mm-mm. I don't feel it. I don't get that vibe.
I don't either. I don't think she has. I mean, this is basically a looks first performance, and I don't think Naomi has a look that would resonate with this ninja movie.
No.
It's shocking that Nicole's look resonates, but somehow it does, I guess.
It works. She's like a full 2 feet taller than every man in the movie, too.
Yeah. It's that weird age range where, like, all girls are taller than all boys at that age.
Yeah.
Okay, next is approachability. So if you see Nicole's Amy character, I guess, where would you run into her? At that bar or something? How likely are you to strike up a conversation with her?
I'd say 4. I think her character is very approachable. She's a girl next door type, you know?
Yeah, I love your swift answers to this. Next is the Scientology scale. So a high score on this would be a movie that flies in the face of the tenets of Scientology, and a low score on this would be a movie that is basically Scientology propaganda. I had to remind myself of my own scale just now. That was the hesitation.
I guess I'd give it like a 2.5. It's not really either.
Okay.
It's doing its own thing, regardless of Scientology, but not in spite of Scientology either.
Yeah. In the sake of keeping whole numbers, I'm going to give you a 3 because I think it is truly neutral.
Great.
Great. And then finally, this one is a great one for this film. This is overall level of iconicness as it pertains to Nicole's career.
I would give it like a -5 if I could, but if I can't, then I'd give it a 1. This is like a deep, deep cut. This is like you hit a major artery deep cut.
I'm actually surprised at how many places this is available. Like, granted, it was like iTunes or like Epics and I think Vudu, but even that alone, I'm like, I don't know how that's possible.
It was rough.
Okay, this gives you a very indicative 15 out of 30. So I will tell you that you're not the lowest movie on the list. I will say a couple of other things. You're tied with Fur, which is the movie that Zach Heltzel did. You are You're tied with The Railway Man, which is another pretty forgettable movie. And you are just behind Wind Rider, which was Jack O'Brien's contribution to this scale.
I've literally never heard of any of those movies, so I'd say that I'm in pretty good company.
I was really struggling to find one with name recognition. So you mentioned Dead Calm. You're tied with Dead Calm. And you're 1 point behind Cold Mountain, which maybe you've heard of.
Yeah, I've heard of both of those, and my boyfriend really likes Dead Calm, so I'm sure I'll be watching that soon.
Dead Calm is fun. Also, Billy Zane is very hot in it.
Ooh, I'm here for hot Billy Zane for sure.
He's manic in the movie, but he is shirtless because they're on a boat, and it's a good time. Okay, great. I have one last task for you, if you're up to it. And this is something that I ask all guests to do. So in lieu of talking about Big Little Lies myself, I am kind of outsourcing it to all the guests. And the only trick is you'll have a minute to do it. Oh, is that Edie barking?
That's Edie barking. Is it annoying?
No, I can't believe I made it 40 minutes without talking about her, to be perfectly honest.
She's been such a bitch.
I'm keeping it in. Fuck it. If you guys don't know, Josh has a very, very adorable dog. So you'll get... oh, I'm so happy. You'll get a minute to say whatever you think is important about Big Little Lies. And you'll be able to start whenever I pull up the timer on my phone, which is now.
Okay, so Big Little Lies is set in Monterey, California. It's about a group of wealthy moms and housewives. There's a murder. You don't know who did it. You're cutting in and out of time. And eventually, Lenny Kravitz's daughter did it.
Wow, you're going to take just that brisk. Great. All right. Yeah. That was a brisk 18 seconds.
There's not a lot to say about that. Thanks, Edie.
What a bitch. Any predictions of season two?
I predict it will be really bad, but everyone will love it. Great. It's got Meryl Streep in it, right?
yeah, it does. And we know, I think at this point, that Reese Witherspoon throws an ice cream at her. Just heard this week, I don't know if I've talked about this on mic yet, that I think Nicole's daughters are making an appearance.
No, that feels right. That tracks.
Yeah. I have to assume that they're the Keith Urban children, but I could actually be entirely wrong.
Could be, but I think you're probably right.
Before we go, where can people find you and your work?
You can find my work on Netflix, but you can find me. I'm on all the things, but I'm most active on Twitter. It's at Joshua Conkle.
As always, you can find the podcast, wherever fine podcasts are found, but you should also rate and review because that helps. But you can find the podcast on Twitter at The Kid Manifesto or me at Mr. Sam Herbst. I guess I didn't ask you this, but there's really no music from this movie worth finding. Is there something you want to be played out to? And it can be anything, I guess.
Maybe something from Moulin Rouge.
Okay, I can do that. A movie you feel just neutral about. Josh, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been so fun.
Say hi to Edie for me, and I can't wait to finish Sabrina.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Roxanne, you don't have to put on that red light. Walk the streets for money. You don't care if it's wrong or if it's right. Roxanne.